Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel, where are you?
New York City.
Wow.
Jenny from the block.
You doing your whole thing?
Actually, no, I'm going somewhere and I'm just trying to keep my hair down. You know how it goes. I want it to frizz all up.
You should wear that though. That looks
you like this like look? I used to rock the scarves all the time on my head. I don't know. It got away from me.
Why? You got too much money?
Have you not? My hair. No.
You got too much money.
If you notice, Rachel, my hair changes all the time. Different wig. Yeah. Sometimes it's natural. Yeah. Sometimes I got weave right now. You know, I like to keep it funky, as Trudy used to say.
That hotel room looks a little lacking. I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna be honest.
What?
I look at it, it looks very basic.
That is a.
Oh no! I changed my mind. It looks good. Where when you go to New York, I've been told.
I'm like, wait, where? By wait. Tommy Alford, by the time this comes out, I'm not stay. I can't say where I'm staying. But what did Tommy say? I should hit Tommy up.
They say that when you stay at a hotel in New York, that you shouldn't stay in Midtown. A lot of these people put me in Midtown. I like to stay on the Lower East Side.
No.
But I can put Midtown. What borough are you in right now?
I'm by Central Park. So I'm right, right above. Right above. Why are you laughing?
It sounded like you said you were in bisexual park.
Like,
where is that at? I'm bisexual. I'm in bisexual park.
I'm by Central Park. Right above,
bisexual park
right
is
above,
interesting. Park.
Right above Midtown, but I don't like Lower East Side. I don't like Lower East Side because it's too crowded. It's too crowded for me. I need a little space. I need a little breathing room.
Yeah.
These streets aren't crowded.
You don't like crowds in New York City, right?
What can I say? Even when I lived here, I lived in Jersey. I'm not.
You did?
Yeah, I need.
It's tough for me too. I'm a country boy. I tell you what though, Central Park is, I'm convinced, I've said this before, Central Park, most wondrous place in the world.
Yeah.
It's the most magical,
whimsical. Well, I don't know about the world, but.
Whatever.
It is magical and whimsical.
Let me talk my shit.
It is magical and whimsical. Go ahead.
I go to Central Park and I'm walking through the park. I see people laid out like it's the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Then I see a press conference about reproductive rights outside of the Susan B. Anthony statue that they're doing that. I'm like, God damn, it's like a huge fucking, it's like a big contrast between, you know, it's like, you know. Now I continue to walk outside roller disco. This is all within 15, 20 minutes
roller
of walking.
Disco.
Outside roller disco, Central Park, this summer, put it on my Instagram. Mm. Then I continue to walk. Fucking swans and boats, niggas like horse-drawn carriages and fucking people sword fighting. You know what I'm saying? They also sword fight in bisexual park, but different thing. But yeah, I like it, but I don't know. New York just it. New York arrests me. It's like sensory overload for me sometimes.
There, I feel invigorated when I come here. There's something that I just knowing so much happens here and things get done here and deals are made here makes me feel so special. It just takes me back to the time that I was 17 years old when I came here for the first time. And I remember being in Times Square and I was like, one day I'm going to be here. And I didn't even know what I was going to do. Fast forward to having our billboard in Times Square. So there's something about it that I'm connected to, but I don't want to necessarily live here. I like to be connected to the city, but not of the city.
You like to be connected to the city, but not of the city. So do you like LA? We've never really discussed this.
I like
since
LA.
You moved out there.
I like LA. I love Texas. That's home. But I like LA.
So you say that Dallas is better than Los Angeles.
My family's there. My nephews are there.
And that's not what I asked
but
you.
But that's why it's better to me. That's why it's better to me.
I'm not. That's not the point. I'm asking you, don't see, I don't need you to emotionalize this. Uh-uh. That's what's wrong with Black people. We're too emotional about this.
I'm going to call the judge. Don't do that.
Like, what's the judge? Which city is better?
Dallas.
Dallas is a better city than Los Angeles.
To me.
Interesting. Okay. Whoa, hold on. Wait a minute. I'm with it.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
We have a podcast. These are things we talk about. So I want to know, in your opinion, because this will definitely be this. What the fuck is that?
Donnie?
No, that was from you. That was not me. It's quiet on my end.
What the hell is going on?
Chloe? Christian? Who did that?
Who is Chloe?
Who we got the interns in sitting in.
Chloe? Christian?
Hey, no, their mics are off. It was not them.
Bullshit. It said Chloe Clark.
Show your face.
It said Chloe Clark on my shit. Pop on. Pop on, Chloe. Pop
on. You
done
done it now. You done it now.
Chloe, I need video right now or you're fired.
I'm here.
Chloe.
What's going on, Chloe?
Mute your shit.
I got you.
Okay. Mute your shit. Now it's got to be Chloe time a little bit. Now we got to.
Chloe.
So, since you want to be on the podcast, Chloe.
LA.
Dallas or LA, Chloe? Which one do you like better?
I have to say LA. I've never been to Dallas. I've heard.
Turn her camera off. Turn her mic off.
Yeah.
No. Chloe, I was kidding.
She's gone. Chloe's smart. See, you fucked it up. We had Chloe on the run. And Chloe was so smart. You said turn it off. She's like, I'm out. So, Dallas. So you say Dallas is better than LA, and the question, because this is obviously we're going to break this out and then put this out for public consumption so people can. Why is Dallas better than Los Angeles?
You know, my main reason is emotional.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm asking you to be look. By the way, the whole Black people too emotional thing, that's what they've been saying about us the last 2 weeks since niggas been wilding on their platforms everywhere. But I want to know if you truly think that Dallas is better than Los Angeles, and if so, why? This is an interesting topic.
Well, I just think that Dallas, it's hard for me to not be biased because I'm born and raised there. So to me, there's more of a familial aspect. Not talking about my family. I just feel more, it's easily, first of all, people are nicer. It's
in Dallas?
The food is better.
In LA?
Mm-hmm. Dallas.
The food is better in Dallas than Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's cap.
Mm-mm. 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 We got better barbecue. We got better Tex-Mex. Come on.
Yeah. The Mexican. So you got better Tex-Mex. Are you saying right now that the Mexican food, I know you guys got the Tex-Mex. First of all, I fuck with Dallas heavy.
I know you
Shout
do.
Out to all of my people. I love Dallas.
Put up where he could not stop talking about Dallas when he was there.
I love Dallas. I love Dallas. I love Dallas. Love it. You're telling me right now that Dallas has better Mexican food, Tex-Mex, whatever you want to call it, than Los Angeles.
Yes.
That's cap.
Did you try the Tex-Mex food in Dallas?
I did. And by the way, I've lived in Dallas and been to Dallas a lot. I'm from Louisiana.
You lived in Dallas, DeSoto, I might add. Totally different.
Now you diss DeSoto?
I'm from the south side of Dallas. No, I'm just saying.
Wow.
Where... I don't think DeSoto is known for its Tex-Mex food. And mind you, you were like 8 when you lived there. I think Dallas has changed a bit. I think food-wise, it's better. I think community-wise, it's better. Obviously, the nightlife's better. I think the opportunity for what I want to do in LA is better.
Obviously, the nightlife.
In LA.
Okay,
the nightlife
cool.
is better. Gotcha. The opportunity is better in LA for the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I feel Dallas is a city I feel more connected to, and I feel like you can feel more connected to than LA. LA, Dallas is segregated. LA is, but in a different way. Dallas,
right.
In the traditional way. LA, in a status kind of way, in a professional kind of way. You're either in or you're out. It's different. Dallas isn't necessarily like that. And it's so up and coming.
So I want to do something. I love Dallas. Shout out to everybody in Dallas. Shout out to everybody from all over the place in Dallas. Love y'all. I want to do something now. I want to have, where's the best Mexican food in Dallas?
I'm not the one to ask.
See, you're just losing credibility is what's happening. But you say it's bad. That's fine, Rachel. It's fine. It's an emotional thing. We're an emotional people. It's fine. You're just losing credibility. This is what I would like to do, though. It's fine, Rachel. It's fine. You don't even have a favorite Mexican restaurant there. It's better. That's fine. Oh, so this is what. No, don't look something up. Don't no, Rachel.
Let me look the name.
If you Google shit, you'll finish this podcast with Chloe. Like, don't Google anything. It's fine. Oh, know what? You don't even know the place that you told us about. What was the place that you told us about that you would go get the burritos or some place? It was like a gas station.
Yes, that used to be open. No, I did. I said Fuel City. I'm the one. I definitely said Fuel City. I knew that.
Okay, Fuel City. Okay, Fuel City. You could. Okay, so Fuel City. All right, but look, I want to have a higher learning sponsored taste off of Mexican food.
Okay.
Between Dallas and Los Angeles. Because this is interesting. There's always this thing, Texas versus California, as it relates to Mexican food. I want to have a higher learning taste off. I want Dallas restaurants to submit to be chosen for this. I already know the places out here in LA. It's a lot of bomb ass. It's different types of Mexican food in here. It's Mexican food from different parts of Mexico. All right, it's Mexican food that's totally different. You have bit off something that you definitely cannot chew. I want you to find out.
That's only because I can't name places.
Nah, who's going to represent Dallas? And we're going to do a Dallas versus LA taste off.
Okay, but how are we going to do this?
Right here.
How are we going to
do this? I mean, we're going to do either.
Because I'm going to need a proxy. I clearly need a proxy because I don't do it.
Well, no. We'll do a little research. You know, I don't expect you to know every single Mexican food restaurant in Dallas. Great. You know, so we'll do some research.
Okay.
But since you say this, Donnie, you have to cut this piece. I'm going to put this on Twitter and in the Twitter sphere universe. Well, maybe not Twitter. Shit.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll find somewhere else to promote this bitch. But we're going to put this out, and I want restaurants, any restaurant in Dallas that thinks they're great, any restaurant in LA that thinks they're great, and we're gonna have Soulless Jackals / Thought Warriors judge this. We're gonna have a little dinner.
Let's go.
Dallas versus fucking Los Angeles. Can't believe you dissed
my But can we agree on the barbecue though? Dallas is better barbecue.
Yeah, Dallas is better barbecue
than LA. Okay.
I mean, this, look, like, to me, Dallas got great food.
Healthy food when it comes. I'm not going to say Dallas has better healthy food, vegan restaurants than Dallas, or Dallas is better than.
I mean, anything in that realm, I feel like Dallas has. But I sometimes think LA gets like hated on in terms of how good the food here.
There's
some of the finest restaurants in the world.
And I know that I'm clearly. I know everyone's listening to this and like, okay, Rachel, you can't even name fast food things. I've never been wowed by the LA food.
Well, you're not wowed by any food. Nigga, you never had a Big Mac.
No, my favorite restaurant is Black Eyed Peas.
Right. All right. Big deal of the day. Affirmative action. Being challenged. Challenge it. On the other side of this break.
As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before. Because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef. Because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and we love our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Okay, the Supreme Court, which has a 6-3 conservative majority, will hear back-to-back oral arguments, in the University of North Carolina and Harvard cases. Of course, you guys remember, these are cases that seek to explore the constitutionality of affirmative action and how it affects, who it affects, and how it is being administered. The arguments against affirmative action are being brought by a group called Students for Fair Admissions, and it's led by conservative activist Ed Blum. The group's lawyers have asked the justices to overturn the 2003 ruling, Grutter versus Bollinger, in which the court said race could be considered as a fact in the admission process because universities had a compelling interest in maintaining a diverse campus. Now, it's long been held that there are different sociological issues that are involved in admission to these higher universities. When you look at some of these universities, a lot of them have kids who are fed into them by pipelines. We know
right.
this, right?
Legacy, yeah.
We know that, well, not even legacies. I'm talking about even, how about this? There's a school called Choate Rosemary, right? Which is just one of very many boarding schools that exist on the East Coast. There are kids that go to Harvard, and I'm not. Harvard, Yale, all of these Ivies that are literally prepared to go to those schools since the moment they start reading books. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They, and it's not even about legacy sometimes. Sometimes it's about, even if you never had someone, you could be nouveau riche. You could have some sort of proximity to somebody else that knows what you're supposed to do. There are a lot of ways to get into those schools that have to do with your social status in America, right? That has to do with where you come from in America. So, you know, affirmative action is something that says, hey, there are a lot of people who are worthwhile, who are bright, and certain measurements that we have to find those people might not always be socially fair. And so affirmative action says, in my opinion, that there is merit to having a diverse student body that doesn't just have to do with academics, that doesn't just have to do with test scores or anything like that. It has to do with the fact that having different people that you go to school with affects the way you live your life as a politician or a business person. And that in and of itself is a reason to encourage affirmative action. Okay. First of all, what do you think about that? Do you think do you believe in that? Or do you think that all schools should be for white people? Which one do you believe in?
Okay, man. Well, when you set the question up like that, I'm a product of an affirmative action policy. My parents are products of affirmative action policy. So this actually makes me, it hits really deep because I was talking to both my mom and my dad about this. Turn on the TV this morning. They're talking about it on CNN. And I called both my parents separately to talk about it. Had there not been these policies in place, one, my parents would not have met each other. And two, they wouldn't have had the education that they did have to go on and do the things that they've done. We talked about my dad here on here. My dad has been a first in two different ways. My dad wouldn't have had those opportunities had affirmative action not been in place. And what bothers me so much about this, there's a number of things, but if affirmative action isn't just, oh, you're black or you're brown or you're a minority and you get in, it's one of the things among many that's considered to let you into that institution. So you're not solely getting in. I can't stand this fear mongering and these things that are put out there like, oh, well, you're black and you're brown and you got in over my white child who deserved to get in. No, that person who got in happens to be black or brown. It's one thing that's considered among all the other things. And so affirmative action to me puts merit over privilege, which is exactly what you just explained about these boarding schools that feed into these Ivy League schools. There's a reason that it was put into place. There's a reason that LBJ signs an executive order to enforce certain things that were under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to make sure that institutions were not discriminating against minorities so they can have a fair education. So there can be equality and diversity when it comes to who attends these schools. And I'm sick of this whole thing where it's like, if you go to a PWI, I went to a PWI. This is one time where I can talk about this, you know, because you like to shame me for not going to HBCU. If you go to a PWI, these people are acting as if it is black and brown sprinkled with white. You are very much so still a minority with affirmative action policies in place. When I went to UT, 3% black, and that includes the graduate students. Out of 52,000 students, 3% were black. That's with affirmative
action. And all the niggas play football.
That's with, and I constantly got asked if I was an athlete. Constantly got asked if I was an athlete if I was there.
Well, that's also so, because you could have gone to the Olympics. You said this already. You said that you could have gone to the Olympics. You said that back in the day. You said that. Bring up the tape.
I said I wanted to. All
right. You make a lot of great points. So here is another example of why it's sometimes frustrating to think yourself a citizen of this country. So let's look at what we're talking about here. So affirmative action seeks to, and all these other things, we're going to talk about Blum and Nair and who is bringing forth this, who's making a ruckus here and what this could possibly mean
and been
in terms of changing the landscape. Been doing it, right? So think about this, right? So the legacy of Black Americans in this country has always been about access. And one of the main things that has been denied Black Americans, you know, is an education. Okay. Mm-hmm. It starts off very binary at first. It's, you can't teach a slave to read. We don't want slaves to know how to read, right? And there's many reasons why you don't want a slave to learn how to read, right? You don't want them to have too much agency in the society that you've set up. You don't want them to read. To what if a slave fucks around and reads the Iliad or the Odyssey and they go, Jesus Christ, like we can fight, or they read whatever, you know,
right,
whatever
right.
it is.
They start to get ideas. Or
they start to get ideas, right? They start to get all of these philosophical things in them that are happening. And you know what I mean? It changes their worldview, which is what reading books, you sons of bitches.
Literate culture.
Is literate culture is what reading books does. It oftentimes takes you out of the way you think your world actually is or is, and it connects you to a different view, a different purview of it. It gives you brand new ideas and brand new strength to go out and access those ideas. But, you know, they never wanted us to have that, right? Never wanted us to have it. So then we build our own schools. We can help build our own schools, the HBCU, something that you just talked about. And we know now that throughout the history of the HBCU, a lot of which are land-grant universities, that they've been criminally underfunded, right? They've been criminally underfunded, illegally underfunded,
right?
In terms of the money they should have had. And so we've seen HBCUs struggle with their accreditation. We've seen HBCUs struggle to keep the lights on. We've seen HBCUs really have to scrape and really, really cobble together enough resources to educate Black and brown students, which is their goal. So you have a situation to where they're trying to choke the education that we created specifically for us. And at the same time, they're saying that like addressing the issues of the past is not sufficient enough for you to be granted admission to these Ivy League schools, these schools that don't have a lot of Black kids on the campus. And by the way, you can't be, like Rachel said, you can't be slappy C+ student and go to Harvard because you're Black.
Correct.
That's not what this is. That's not what this. This is saying that it's a factor in admissions. That it essentially what they're saying is Harvard wants Black kids, wants brown kids, and we're going to carve out some space for them to be at our school because we just don't have faith in ourselves that right. we're going to do that unless we have to. And we think that that's noble. So Blum's group says that any consideration of race is unlawful under both federal law that bars discrimination in education and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. They argue that the UNC, because part of this is not just about these Ivy League schools, it's about other big, huge PWIs, that the UNC admissions policy discriminates against white and Asian applicants, and that the Harvard policy discriminates against Asians. In both cases, lower courts ruled in favor of the university. So now we're at the Supreme Court. In defending the policies, the universities and their supporters, including the Biden administration, civil rights groups, businesses, and former military leaders, argue that excluding someone based on race is completely different than seeking diversity on campus, which, you know, to me makes a lot of sense. Universities say that race is just one factor and that is considered as part of a broad, individualized analysis of each applicant. Rachel, I have a slightly controversial question for you.
Oh, okay.
And it's an unfair question.
Oh.
And so I would preface this with the fact that it's not fair. When this happened at Harvard, it happened on behalf of some of the Asian student body at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And this is not lay in the feet or in the lap of our Asian brothers and sisters. However, I would like to see members of the Asian community, Asian American community, which has had strained relationship with Black Americans recently and sometimes in the past. I would think that if there's a challenge to affirmative action, that some members of the Asian community out there would maybe be taking a stronger stance on what this could mean. And I looked around before we got jumped on this podcast to see if there was any critical mass, if anybody was coming to defense, if anybody was saying, hey, we don't feel discriminated against, we don't feel that this is discriminatory, and we think that ending affirmative action would be a horrible thing for society. So I talked to a friend about this. And they told me, and they said, look, it's tough. It's an Asian friend of mine.
Okay, I was going to ask. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. They say, look, it's tough. It's like, why? He's like, no one wants the end of affirmative action. However, in our culture, school is one of the most important things in terms of determining our social mobility. It's drilled into us. We study, 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 we study. That is our, and he's just speaking for, his community and people that he knows. This is a guy I've known since high school, incredibly bright. And so for us, access to school, that being important, it's like a cornerstone of how we have attained any sort of excellence or stature in America. And it's just hard sometimes because with all the work that you put into that, you want access based upon what you've put in. And you don't want anything other than the grade point average, the fucking school stuff, the extracurriculars, and all of that work. You want it to mean something. So he's like, I could see a lot of people who understand that kind of being a little torn in terms of this. What do you think about that?
I think that's selfish. Because it only benefits you. And I think that's human nature to think of how things will benefit you or your culture or your community. I understand that. We do a pro-Black podcast. I get it. But I think for you to hold on to that, if that's the mentality that we walk through this entire world with, then who do we lift anybody up but ourselves? And I think if you truly understand how Black people have been treated in this society, Black and Browns, as we're saying, in this society in particular, then you understand why affirmative action, which really should just even be called, because it was called quotas and then it was called affirmative action. And I mean, it is affirmative action, but it's really diversity. If you understand the purpose of even implementing that and why that's necessary, then you understand why race should be considered as one of many factors, not the only factor, when it comes to admission into these institutions, so we can all have a fair chance. I just don't think there is enough statistically out there, which is why race being one thing that's been considered has been upheld. The last time I think it was challenged was 2003, I think. Why it's been upheld since it has, I think it was first challenged in 1978. Because it's one of many factors. It is not the only factor. And there's really, and it shows how it creates diversity in an institution. And I use diversity loosely because I just told you the statistic at University of Texas when I was there. So I really think, I'm sorry, I think that's a selfish way to think things. I think you're only thinking about your own community and not how that affects us.
And by the way, I should say that that by and large is in no, I just talked to one guy that I've known for a long time and picked his brain, that it is in no way reflective
right. He's not
of what a broad cross-section of the Asian American community thinks at all. But it was just interesting to hear that. I was like, hey, man, like, am I missing something I don't see? He's like, well, you know, it's school. And it's like a central thing. Like with us. And
he
did a great job to explain. Didn't want to come on the podcast because, you know, didn't want to. He lives a nice, quiet life. Doesn't want
to. Yeah, so. Don't do that to him, man. Don't do that. There are Black and brown people as well whose school is extremely important to them. I'm a product of an affirmative action policy, top 10%, which has since changed. That's not even the rule anymore in Texas. It is since
top 10%.
Yeah, it is since changed. Like if you're in the top 10% of your school, no matter what school you go to, you automatically have admission into state schools. This is the policy when I was back in 2003.
Oh, the TOPS program, yeah.
Is that what y'all called it? TOPS?
Yeah, call it, so that's, you, that's you a, call
that's
it TOPS.
That's a policy. That's a form of affirmative action.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's changed since then. It then went to 7%. I don't even know what the issue is now. Actually, I take that back. I said 2003. It might be 2016 because that girl who went to LSU was trying to get into University of Texas and she was challenging it. Remember that? And she went to LSU and she was upset. Can't blame her.
Whatever. all right. So it's going to be an uphill battle for this.
No. It's not an uphill battle. It's going to get overturned. Like, let's just, I need people to wrap their minds around this. If Roe v. Wade was overturned after being upheld since 1973, affirmative action is getting overturned. We're 6-3. Chief Justice Roberts has already been outspoken. The guy who has the swing vote has already been outspoken about not having affirmative action. It's done. Ketanji has removed herself from the Harvard because of her affiliation to Harvard, some board that she sits on. So that's only 8 votes on that one. It's done. It's over with. And I need people to understand it, which is why it upsets me so much because I'm already talking about my history to it, my family's history to it. And now I'm going to see my future children and my nephews grow up in a society where affirmative action is not in place. Also, to add to that, there are already 9 states that don't have affirmative action policies. And they've talked about what their campuses look like and how their institutions have suffered because in regards to diversity, because there aren't any affirmative action policies. And I'm also, this is all a part to me of the bigger picture that they're just putting, and by there I mean white people, are putting policies and things in place because everybody knows this country is moving to a minority majority and they're doing things to keep their reign and hold on their society, on the society and the social caste system. It's bigger than that. And that's how I look at this whole thing. And if people don't think like this, it's done. It's done at this point. Anything that has existed for decades and decades, as soon as it approaches this 6-3 court, it's over. It's a wrap. It's getting overturned.
Are you looking for a view of the world that's a bit different? Hi, I'm Jason Palmer, a host of The Weekend Intelligence, a podcast from The Economist. Join us to hear the stories that matter most to our correspondents and editors. Every Saturday, we introduce you to people and ideas that take you outside the ordinary and expand your horizons one episode at a time. Join us and see the world from a new perspective. To listen free until May 31st, search Spotify for The Weekend Intelligence.
Scary, scary stuff in the Pelosi house. The husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was attacked and severely beaten with a hammer by an assailant who broke into the couple's San Francisco home early Friday. David DePape, 42, confronted the 82-year-old Paul Pelosi with a hammer and attempted to tie Paul Pelosi up with zip ties until Nancy got home. That's what's being reported. Pelosi called 911 when he encountered the threatening man and left the line open. San Francisco police entered the house around 2:27. Officers saw DePape violently assault Pelosi with the hammer before they tackled him to the ground and arrested him. This has sparked one of the most disgusting reactions I've ever seen to anything. The reaction to something like this is part and parcel, in my opinion. Just examples of why I don't think there's any going back now. So, conspiracy theories sprouted from this, that this in some way wasn't what it seemed. I've heard all kinds of speculation, from the speculation of a false flag attack to speculation about Paul Pelosi's sexuality on Elon Musk's new Twitter. I've seen all kinds of things, except for people interrogating whether or not the current political climate of America leads people to do extremist and violent things. This is not an isolated incident. We've seen other people invoke white replacement theory in mass shootings. We've seen that. We've seen people use talking points that they've heard from all over the place to commit violent acts. And so look, it's happened primarily on one side, but at the same time, someone did open fire on a softball game and shoot Steve Scalise years ago. What I'm talking about right now is not who's perpetrating the political violence. What I'm talking about right now is the propensity of Americans to engage into political violence, like we saw even at the FBI building, and why we can't have that conversation free of agenda. There shouldn't be anything that stops anyone from saying that this was wrong. It seems to be clear to me that this was an assassination attempt on Nancy Pelosi. This guy had all types of rhetoric that informs me of that. And the fact that we can't just have a conversation about how fucked up that is just, it shows to you, it's a diagnosis of America's current political disease. And when the disease gets this bad, it's like stage four. I don't think that there's any curing it. But when you saw this, what did you see? I mean, the Republicans have been just textbook putrid on this. They have. And I say the Republicans because, like, I'm not a Democrat, but I say the Republicans because that's who's been putrid on this. Like, putrid on this.
When you say putrid, I'm not talking about the extreme stuff that's been said, but are you even referring to putrid as the fact that, and this, I guess, dives into the political or having an agenda, but the fact that they're saying that this is just an isolated incident with this guy, rather than realizing that this guy was driven to do this by certain rhetoric that he has heard from these politicians, from their supporters?
It's not even that deep. What it's about is, look, I'm talking about from the highest ranking, biggest swinging dicks and vaginas on the right. Just a rebuke of this. Just a rebuke, right? Like, there's a reason why you don't call out the white supremacists in your base. And a lot of people think that it's because you are a white supremacist. And that could be true. But the more likely thing is because you don't want to offend them.
That's definitely it.
So, but think about that, though. Not wanting to offend them and wanting them to be a part of your base and wanting them to have a voice in your base is energizing and giving validation to what it is that they're saying. So it's not enough that people are asking all kinds of weird questions about this, right? And we'll see as we learn more if there's any truth to any of the fucking muses that people are throwing out. Is that by not rebuking this, you're endorsing it.
Absolutely.
Because what you're doing is you're saying, I don't want to come out strong against this because I don't want to offend anybody that might think this was the right thing to do.
Or I don't want to lose a vote. I don't want to lose the vote. I don't want to lose my base. It's terrifying. There's no ethics at all. People, it's like there are no morals, there are no values. Everything is unethical. You're right. On its face, you should be able to condemn this and honestly should be terrified that we're living in a society. If January 6th, that alone should have shown you something. But now here we have, and like, I don't even want to get into the fact that there should be, and maybe they'll revisit the rules that are in place for family members of these politicians. But now we're living in a society where you have, and I think we talked about this, where we're creating these vigilantes that are going to attack politicians, outspoken people, activists. We're seeing them attack immigrants, anything that is against what they're pushing on the far right. And it's sad because we've seen this before. And this isn't going to be the last time that we see something like this. This is terrifying. You asked me my original thought. It's absolutely terrifying.
You're scared. So am I.
Yeah. My mom texts me a prayer when she saw this. She said, "You have a platform and you're extremely outspoken. We're really living in scary times."
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she's afraid something's going to happen to you?
Yeah, she's just like, "You're very outspoken. You just don't know.
You never know." Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, I actually screenshot this. Right after Pelosi sent, and I didn't tell my mom this, and she's not going to hear this now. Right after Pelosi sent, or not sent, but right after what happened to Pelosi happened, I got an email that said, "Rachel Lindsay, shut the fuck up, you black nigger bitch."
That's I got to hear both sides.
It's not like you're funny.
What were y'all talking about? I got to hear both sides. I got to, you know. Obviously, that's terrible.
That's the kind of stuff that my mom gets scared.
Of course, there was Tom Emmer, who I watched on Face the Nation. He had to answer questions about the fact that he posted a video of himself firing a gun with the hashtag Fire Pelosi. That was last week. This is that image. Fire Pelosi, he's got a gun.
You know what you're doing.
And it's a dog whistle. And it's not even a good one because us humans can hear it. It's just getting scary out there. It's getting scary out there. Well, it's not scary as the world of...
Have you seen The Watcher?
The Watcher. What is that?
It's on Netflix. It's a series that's out. It's based on a true story. Uh-huh. There is a conversation that's had in that series, and this isn't giving anything away, and they have a conversation about a saeculum.
What's that?
It's like, let me get the exact definition. A saeculum... it's a length of time roughly equal to a potential lifetime. They say around 80 years. And they say, if you look at history, every 80 years, something happens. American Revolution, 80 years later, you had the Civil War. 80-ish years later, you had World War II. 80-ish years later is now. It's just interesting. Sorry.
I went down a dark,
he didn't say all that. He just said it. And I went down a dark hole, started plugging in numbers. And I was like, wow. Every 80 years, it's like not generation comes, but it's another lifetime. And so it's a turning over and something big happens and we're living in it right now.
How come somebody didn't tell me about the saeculum? Somebody should have let me know when the saeculum was coming. I don't like that shit. They should have been preparing us for the saeculum in like 95. What is it?
Donnie.
How do you say that word, Donnie? Now
I'm gonna go Donnie. Saeculum.
How do you?
But I don't say that word.
Saeculum.
Yeah, it's spelled that way.
How come nobody told us about the saeculum? You know how much different stuff I'd have been doing if I'd have known that the saeculum was on its way.
It's crazy.
Everything's going to change in 2022. Saeculum.
But I mean, you have said that, you know, dynasties only last a certain couple hundred years and
I was saying that to sound smart, not to fucking have more anxiety. Mm. Fucking secular.
The judge says that too, though. What you say?
The judge said what?
About the dynasties too. He's been saying
that
too.
They don't last. They don't last. Mm-hmm. They don't last. They get to a point of decadence and where they crescendo, and then bye.
Oh, bye. We fancy today.
Oh, we got the I thought we were gonna be on camera at the thing, so I went and went to the thing.
You put the pinky ring on when we're in person.
Put the pinky ring on. You know what I'm saying?
Wear it next week because we got a special guest coming in person next
special
week.
Special guest coming in.
Pinky rings out.
Yeah, I'm the special guest that we have coming in next week. I'm going to challenge them to an arm wrestling match.
Van, why are you going to do that to yourself?
I know. So what? I'm challenging them to an arm wrestling match. I need to see if all the muscles work.
That's y'all's hand.
I can't wait. Kyrie Irving, in the world of sports, he goes back and forth after he appeared to promote an anti-Semitic film. Now, if you guys don't know this, Kyrie Irving, who's never had any controversy, he went on his social media and he posted a link to a documentary called Negroes Wake Up Black America. So 2018 film.
Hebrews to Negroes.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, sorry. Sorry. I'll say it again. Hebrews to Negroes. Wait. Hold on. Hebrews. It's no disrespect intended.
Oh, wait. It's a turn down service. Hebrews to Negroes. Let me tell them. It's a turn down service.
Hi. Well, thank you. I'm fine. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm fine. I'll do it.
That's how you sound. She can't even hear this.
I can't hear you because I have my AirPods in. Thank you.
it's Hebrews to Negroes. Hebrews to Negroes, Wake Up Black America. It came out in 2018. It's a film that reportedly focuses on anti-Semitic tropes. I've never seen the movie. I was so tempted to watch it last night.
No.
I was tempted to watch it just to see. You know what I mean? And this is the fucking problem. I was tempted to watch it just to see. Because the thing is with me, I always want to be able to make my own mind up on something. I probably still watch it. I'm not going to lie. But so now this is why the word promote is so key in this. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the movie claims that many famous high-ranking Jews have admitted to worshiping Satan or Lucifer. I don't think I'm going to watch it. I changed my mind. I had not seen that sentence. so I don't think I need any more. Okay? Kyrie was asked about that. Okay, so that happens. And then Nets governor, Josiah comes out and he talks about this. He says, you know, we'll support this and we hope that our players understand the anti-Semitic tropes. There's no place for them. Blah, blah, blah. Kyrie Irving comes back on his Twitter and seemingly tries to clarify what he meant by posting it. He claims to be an omnist. So he respects all religions and all different religious tenets and everybody's point of view on that. And then he was asked about it post-game this weekend. This is what Kyrie had to say.
I'm in a unique position to have a level of influence on my community. And what I post does not mean that I support everything that's being said or everything that's being done or I'm campaigning for anything. All I do is post things for my people and my community and those that it's actually gonna impact. Anybody else that has criticism, it obviously wasn't meant for them.
Hopefully I'm understanding what you said and I wanna make sure I get it right because I don't wanna misquote any part of it.
I don't expect understanding from a media conglomerate group that sincerely talks about the game of basketball and then we bring up religion as if it's correlative at times when it's convenient for people to bring it up. So please just be direct with your question so we can move on from this and I could talk about the game and go home to my son, Elohim, and my wife, Marlene, okay?
Am I to take it that what you shared was not something that you've even watched? This was, you did watch it, or either watch it or read it.
I had a lot of time last year to read a lot. Read a whole bunch, good and bad, about the truth of our world.
So then do you, I guess, understand or not understand those that might imply that that work had anti-Semitic leanings in it. I only ask this because the tweet is still up there, so I
presume. We're in 2022. It's on Amazon, a public platform. Whether you want to go watch it or not is up to you. There's things being posted every day. I'm no different than the next human being, so don't treat me any different. You guys come in here and make up this powerful influence I have over top of the adultery of, oh, you cannot post that. Why not?
Okay. So let's have a conversation with love here. Okay.
With love.
Always with love for me when I'm talking to black men.
Okay.
Even in disagreement, even in vehement disagreement, even in even in war, intellectual war, it's always love. I have a dream, Rachel.
Don't get me started.
Okay. I have a dream. And my dream is to exist in a thriving Black community, a world society, where different points of view on how we get to where we're going, different points of view on humanity, religion, and society, economics, are all at the table for discussion.
Okay.
But in order for us to have that, we have to have responsibility. And we have to have a sense of not just personal responsibility, but cultural responsibility. Mm-hmm. Twitter has made it impossible for us to have conversations amongst one another without everybody knowing about them.
Okay.
Because when you say something publicly, I've had many people say to me, Van, why didn't you pull Kanye West aside and talk to him off camera about what he said at TMZ? And I say now because that wasn't sufficient. What was said on a very loud public forum.
Exactly.
And it needed to be met with a counter that was as loud, as direct, but with love and patience for someone who is standing in wrong. You're standing in a lot of wrong, brother. Let me help you. Let me pull you out of your wrong. I want to pull you out of your wrong, or what as I see as your wrong. At the same time, I don't really want it to get on me that much. So I'm going to put my hand out, but I need you to stick your hand out as far so we can get you out of that pit of wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of things that I haven't seen the documentary. So the only thing that in terms of the documentary, and this is another reason why Van's curiosity gets, douchebag alert. This is another reason why my curiosity gets to me sometimes, because I want to be able to counter the specific narrative in the documentary, right? I see here that the documentary talks about Jewish people who might worship the devil, and the fact that high-ranking Jewish people worship the devil. I already know that the documentary ain't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that there's much worth in having that conversation. This is what I'll tell Kyrie. This is what I would say to other brothers like Kyrie. You can't have it both ways. Kyrie Irving said it in the same soundbite right there, that he had influence, mm-hmm. and that he wanted to put something out there for his people, right? And at the same time, that he's not influential enough for us to care about what he's saying.
That's it.
And the reason why that's a cop-out from Kyrie Irving is because it both affirms that he's somebody that people listen to, but then tells everyone that I know that, but don't pay attention to what I'm saying. Move on to basketball.
Mm-hmm.
6 million followers on Twitter Kyrie Irving has, and he has them because he is a great basketball player. He's used this platform to talk about a lot of things that are near and dear to him. It's the power of what he has. What I need these brothers to do is to, it's too much for me to ask for them to be able to filter through some of the lies that they're ingesting. That's too much to ask. I think it's too much to ask for me to say, hey, what you watching that and that documentary is most likely bullshit in terms of the religious propaganda against Jewish people. If we want to have a conversation about Black people as Jews in the past, if we want to talk about what Jesus really looked like, if we want to talk about how the world sprang forth from Africa, who the original man is, I'm here for it all. If we're going to use pride in ourselves or pride in the origins of this world as we see them to discount or minimize somebody else's struggle, I can't get with that. I can't get with people who hate Jewish people more than they love themselves. Like, I can't get with anything that is used to kill, rape, or destroy another group of people.
Sure.
If we're talking about us and who we are, and anything that's been subtracted from who we are through history, anything that's been subtracted from who we are through school, let's have those conversations and get to a point to where we really have an understanding of what it is and what Black people have meant, what Africans have meant to human civilization.
Mm-hmm.
But I need Kyrie, his twin brother Kanye, and the rest of the people that are out there to understand that we don't live in a world where the ability to express yourself goes one way. Like, your words are a boomerang.
Right.
You throw them out, and then people throw them back to you.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving, a couple of weeks before this, was sitting up there criticizing people over their treatment of Ben Simmons. Said, yo, give Ben Simmons a fucking chance. Give him a chance. You're using your platform to tell people how you would want somebody else to be treated. The people that have a problem with what he posted on his Twitter are using their various platforms to tell him how they have a problem with what it was that he promoted. And he did promote it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's trying to silence you. Nobody's trying to cancel you.
Right.
People just don't want to hear that shit. And if you're going to be, if it means enough for you to post something,
right,
it should mean enough for you to have the conversation too. So I just hope that they understand that. I don't hate Kyrie Irving. I don't want Kyrie Irving silenced. What I want Kyrie Irving to do is to be responsible. What he did on that during that press conference,
right,
it was cowardly. It was throw a brick and hide your hand. Stand on it. Stand on it. Have the conversation on it. Understand that some people are going to be mad about it, pissed about it. If you're willing to have that conversation, you might just learn why. And I think that could help you and everybody that's involved in the conversation. And I stand on that.
I so well said. I really don't have anything to add to that. All I will say is what Kanye, woo, what Kyrie did in that press conference looked very familiar. And it was, I say what I want to say, and then I want to blame everybody else for it, and I don't want to take responsibility. We've seen it before. We see it a lot with politicians. It looked very, very familiar. And after coming off of what he did with Alex Jones and tweeting that out, I would have thought that he would have been—
Tell him about that. We didn't talk about it. Tell him about
that.
We did.
We talked about him tweeting about, he tweeted, was it a message? Was it a video? He tweeted something in regards, I thought we did. He tweeted something in regards to Alex Jones that promoted something. And I use the word, go ahead.
He posted a clip of Alex Jones from what he says is the late 90s, talking about secret societies and who runs what and whatever. And he says, while he doesn't support what everyone said about Sandy Hook, he does believe that Alex Jones was right.
Didn't he say that after he got criticized? And so that's the thing with Kyrie. You're putting something out there. You're claiming you're not promoting it, but you're using your platform to put it out there and for people to take from it whatever they want to. You come across as a person who doesn't just flippantly promote certain things or put certain things out there. You stand behind them. So coming off of Alex Jones, and it seemed like you didn't have full knowledge of all the things that Alex Jones stood for or why people so are upset with the things that he said or him being a part of this lawsuit. I mean, now It's, you know the story. We talked about it. I would think that you would have learned from that. And instead you did it again. And then you want to blame everybody else for what's happening. Oh, you just want fame from this. Oh, your ass, I don't expect you to understand this. Oh, just stick to basketball. Oh, I'm not promoting it. You can't do that. You can't do that. Can't put something out there and then it'd be free of consequence. So I just want to say I will be at the Brooklyn Nets game tonight. That does not mean that I'm supporting Kyrie.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Go watch the fucking game. You know, it's like,
I'll say anything to you when this comes out.
Go watch the fucking game. It's poor Steve Nash. They just can't play regular basketball up there, man. It's always something going on. Steve Nash is like, Steve Nash is just looks like a fucking deer in headlights. The last thing I want to say in this is like, I hope. So look, a lot of, for me growing up, I'll speak for myself. A lot of what I learned about myself and my people and my heritage was shrouded in conspiracy. So let me put it to you like this. Let me try to make this relatable to some people. Deep down, we know that they're not telling us everything about who we are. Like, you look at the messages that you see on television, you look at the images that you see on television, you look at all of this stuff, and deep down, you know that what they're telling you is not the truth of who you are. And you have a distrust of information. You have a distrust of information. You have a distrust of the story that you're being told about who you are as a Black person, as a member of the world society. What is being left out? We talked about the fact on this podcast that vaccination is something that was developed by West Africans, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. West Africans and Indians, right? In the form of variolation. But that's not what you hear. What you hear about when you hear about vaccination is Edward Jenner, the father of vaccination, a white man who was variolated when he was a kid and went on to take that process that he was able to understand from the Black people who variolated him and then turn it into a vaccine. He becomes something. Meanwhile, we've contributed nothing to civilization. So you hear stories about Black people that invented this, Black people that came up with this, Black people who were here, Black people who were there, who the Moors were. You know what I mean? Where you might be from, what people did. In school, they don't even really teach you about the Haitian Revolution. Okay, where a bunch of Black people down in Haiti, led by Toussaint Louverture, Dudley Bookman, killed their slavers and took their island back and have been paying for it ever since. You don't hear about these things. So because we realize that there are all these hidden histories, because we realize that there are all these things that we're not being told, it can sometimes make us susceptible to anyone with an agenda telling you, have you heard the truth? It can sometimes make us susceptible to anyone who believes whatever they believe telling you, brother, let me hit you to what's really going on. Just the CIA killed Marvin Gaye. To have a conversation about that as a kid, like listen to my two uncles talk about that. Marvin Gaye was making too many songs about uplifting the community, so the CIA had him killed. Listen to my dad going, ain't nobody have him killed. Marvin Gaye was dealing with something and he got into it with his daddy. It happens all the time. Like all of these things, we think about all of these things. We talk about all of these things. You know, there was a conspiracy to have O.J. Simpson locked up. We'll believe that.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not saying it in any way to say that like we're fucked up or we don't have the, but we'll believe that. We'll believe that because we know that brothers have been put in that situation before. Right. There's nothing fucked up about the world that we won't believe. I'm asking all of my brothers, now that this stuff is being mainstreamed, now that this weirdly racist anti-Semitic stuff is being mainstreamed, and that's what's happening. It's being mainstreamed. It's going to go mainstream. I'm asking you guys to ask the appropriate questions about your fellow man. Not to ingest things, not to put them in your soul, not to imbibe them without thinking about the human beings on the other side of that, without thinking about the community on the other side of that. in all walks of life without thinking about the actual people. Fuck Twitter. Fuck your interviews. The people that will suffer when some of these ideas are mainstreamed. Have you litigated these things enough that somebody might get shot in the fucking head for it? That's it. And if you want to talk to me, call me. I have no problem staying on the phone with you niggas. You know.
Well, we know. We met Jack.
Van Lathan, Animal Agents.
Wow.
Listen, guys, I know that some of people, I know, I'll be honest with you guys. Seriously, Animal Games is coming back. I think we should do a special Animal Games with our guests on Monday.
I swear, I thought that's what you were going to say, and I'm for it.
Animal Games. Okay, there was a Montana hunter who shot a Siberian husky and then skinned it. Amber Rose Barnes, we talked about this a little bit. She mistook a six-month-old dog for a wolf. She's been charged with misdemeanor animal cruelty. This is according to the Flathead County Sheriff. The 36-year-old hunter may have sealed her fate by bragging about her kill on social media. So this morning, I set out for a solo predator hunt for a fall black bear. However, I got the opportunity to take another predator. Wolf pup. 2022 was a great feeling. On to text my man and say, I just smoked a wolf pup. Hashtag first world. Hashtag one less predator MT. Shot the dog in self-defense, she says. The dog was acting wild and aggressive. I really hope she gets some jail time.
Yeah.
Can I be honest? I don't understand. Look, I hunted growing up in my early life. I love deer meat. You know, I've hunted rabbit. I've done all of that stuff. So I'd be a hypocrite for me. So my father loved hunting to the day he was no longer here. It'd be a hypocrite for me. That's why the stuff that we hunted, we would eat, we would partake in. Why is she hunting a wolf? Why are people killing bears? Taking the predators out of people, oh, bears kill animals. Taking the predators out of the ecosystem isn't good. This person is when I look at people like this, I be thinking they crazy, man. She seemed like she crazy, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the whole situation. Look how she was bragging about it and everything. It was a pup. It was a pup. Smoked a wolf.
Smoked.
Pup.
Smoked. What a fucking nerd. Amber Rose
definitely
Barnes.
Should be behind bars.
I think she should cool her heels for a little while. And she should have to go work with pups. With dogs, with little pups,
how about this? No, I wouldn't trust her around pups. Don't give her that.
How about this? Let's do this. This is what she should have to do. She should have to survive 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month up there by herself. You're so fucking tough. No gun.
What does she get? Like naked and afraid.
A stick and some beef jerky. I don't like this, man. No, I'm against either. You know what? I might try to stop eating meat. I love animals
okay,
so much.
Okay,
man. Let's be realistic
on the podcast. Come on now. I know the story has you worked up. It makes me upset too. But let's not lie to thought warriors, okay?
I just think about the fact that she killed... Even if it was a wolf, she killed a wolf pup, a baby wolf.
And skinned it and then bragged about it. It's bad. It has
I tell
levels
you, I gotta
to
be, I be honest with y'all, this is some white people shit. You know, it's like some white people shit. You know, you see, you know, I ain't never met a nigga hunting a bear. The fuck? We might kill something that's tasty, put them on the grill. But you
people
let me walk
bear.
In somebody. I'm sure they do, but that don't mean that it don't taste good.
When I was in Finland, bear was on the menu.
Yeah, I bet it was. Think about what I just said. All right. Van's very serious question is Mexican food, Dallas versus Los Angeles. We're going to put this Dallas versus LA Mexican food challenge on.
Our guest can help us with that on Monday.
Is he from Dallas?
Okay. Yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
I never
may or may not have sung on the carpet, Oak Cliff, That's My Hood.
I gotta.
We'll send you the clip. I'll send you the clip.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. This is what we'll do. Since we're having somebody that's famous from Dallas, we got to have somebody that's famous from Baton Rouge on the podcast.
No. Let's do it.
Boosie.
We got a great guest coming on. I've been knowing Boosie.
You know what? This is another person. I've been knowing Boosie for years. I think it's time for him to tell the story.
We still need to cool off from Jack before you bring
Boosie. Hold on. Nah, man. Fuck that shit, man. Boosie coming on the podcast. Shout out to all the Thought Wars.
Not on Monday.
I know y'all gonna love Boosie. Cause you want to run your mouth? You want some gangsters in your motherfucking house? We'll set that bitch. You want to run your mouth? You want some gangsters in front of your motherfucking house? We'll set this bitch off. We'll set this bitch off. The fuck?
They call me badass, right. and I'll punish you.
Let's go out to call me badass, and I'll punish you.
Look at the, you can count the 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You hit. I love that song, but Boosie, I don't want him on the podcast.
Set this bitch off. All right. Anything caps off, but do not stop learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel Lindsay. Bye, guys.